Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Lamed Amud Bet, 8 lines from the bottom. The Gemara here is discussing the statement of Rav Chista called Hamazik Matanot Kuna Oshachlan, someone who damages the Matanot Kuna or eats them, Patur Me L'Shalem. We're bringing numerous challenges to that view of Rav Chista and trying to deal with them. And now once again, here we have Tashma. Minayin the Balabait, Shachal Perutav Tvalim, Balabait who ate his Perot while they were still Tevel. I mean, inside of them is included or subsumed the truma, the masrot, all the things he has to take off. Same thing with the maaser rishon of the levi, which trumat maaser needs to be taken off of if he eats them that way. How do we know that he doesn't have to compensate for the truma that was subsumed in there or the trumat maaser that was subsumed in there? Tamalomar v'lo yechalalu et kodshei b'nei Israel asher yarimu l'Hashem. So you're not allowed to profane the kodoshim that are removed from these items. And the chabahem, elamishat haram aveilech. You only have rights to them from the point of time that they're separated or designated separately. So the reason why you don't have to compensate when you ate them in Tevel is because they were not separately identifiable. They don't have haruma yet. They were not removed from this item. Until they're removed from the item, there's no need for compensation. Now, obviously, if you eat them tevalim, the Gemara and other places learns that there's the same chiyuv mita didei shamayim that applies to truma, and trumat maser applies to maaser rishon that's eaten with the trumat maser subsumed in it. And same with tevalim that have the truma subsumed in them, there's a chiyuv mita didei shamayim because of the truma that's subsumed in them. So eating them is improper, it's problematic. But in terms of the monetary compensation side of it, there's no obligation for monetary compensation over here because you haven't reached the point of harama. You haven't reached the point where they are separately identifiable and that they are their own unique standing. But the deal you could make out of this is, ha mishat harama veilech, mi amishalim. If they were taken off and they were separate and you ate them, then you would have to compensate for them. Amai, lahave ke mazik matnot kuna oshachlan. It should be like the case of Rav Chista, where you did damage to the matnot kuna, or you ate them, and therefore you should not have to compensate. And we saw in yesterday's daf that there were two reasons possibly brought down as to why you would not need to compensate in this case. One of which was that it is mamon shein lo tovim. There's no claimant over here because it's a class claim, not an individual claim. No single individual who comes to make the claim has any right to make the claim. Otherwise, it's a gzirat ha-katub from the word v'zeh yeh mishpat ha-kohanim me'etaham e'zulfei ha-zevach. So, one of those two reasons, according to Rav Chista, there shouldn't be a need for a compensation over here. And from this brayta, it seems to indicate that there is. When it says, ha-kanami da'atu li'adei b'tivlayu, it reached the hands of the Kohen while it was tevel, because Savar Haitano, in the time of this brayta, believes matnot shelo hurmu kimi shehumur damyan. Matnot that are not taken off are viewed as if they were taken off. So now Rashi over here explains two possible scenarios over here. Either it reached the Kohen Vitiv Layu, which is Shihupkuda Tevel Etzlo, that the person deposited the Tevel with him to watch it, to guard it, but then he still is the first party entitled to this item that has come into contact with it. If you view the Matnot Kuna that are subsumed inside of the Tevel as if they've already been removed, so then, when the Kohen gets a hold of them, he's the first one to be zocheh in them, even though he was just given the deposit with him. Nevertheless, the part that belongs to the Kohen, he's the first one to make contact with that, and therefore he could keep it, or he's entitled to it. And therefore, when it's taken off, Rashi says, zachav em in efke sheri kadam, or, lishnachvina, shemaso lo atevel liskot bitruma shebo. Or he handed him tevel and said, you take the truma that's in here, or you're entitled to the truma that is in here. Now, you'd have to then read the Braita. The Braita says that Mishat Harama Veilech, the implications are that only from Harama and onwards are you Chayav. How do you read the Harama now? So now you either have to read the Harama as a figurative Harama, just like the Tevel, we look at his Kefisha Humu, as if they're taken off, and therefore the Kohen's entitled to him because it's as if he did take them off. That's how you'd read it, less literally than we would have thought in the Braita. Or you could still read it literally, which is that the Kohen's right over here only comes into effect after they've been separated out. Which is that he might have a monetary right because he was zocheh in them while they were still subsumed in the Tevel. But that doesn't go into effect until the Truma is actually separated, or until the Trumat Maser is actually separated. And in that way you would read Hamarama the same way we read it originally in the Braita. Until you've separated them out, he does not have a monetary claim over here. He has a right, because he was the first one to come into contact with them. He was given the right to take them. But they don't go into a monetary state of claim until they are actually separated away from the Tevel. And that's what it means, me shata rama velech. Even though Kamisha Hormo Damian makes it as if they are separated, that's only as if they are separated. So he has a right to them, but he doesn't have a monetary claim. The monetary claim only enters once they've been designated separated. Tashma. Areisha anso beit melech grono. The king, or the people of the king, came and confiscated his threshing, his storage. They took away his grains. In bechovo, if it was because he had some sort of outstanding debt or monetary obligation, chayav laser, then it's his responsibility to take off the maser from it, because he is the beneficiary of the payment that's being made. Had they not taken his grains, he would have to pay it out cash. Instead, they're taking the grains, so he's got to pay the maser. In ba'amporot, if it is because they simply want to confiscate his property, not because he owes any money, but they needed some extra cash, whatever reason is that they're confiscating the property, then he's patur milaser, because there he's not getting any personal benefit from it. He is just being demanded to give up his property, and now in giving up his property, he's not the one who owns it anymore, in a sense. It's been taken away from him, and he doesn't have a residual obligation now to pay for the trumot or masrot that were associated with these grains. Now, the question of whether he has the capacity to do so or not is interesting, because of the fact that there's a twofold problem. One problem is eino birshuto, it's not in his possession anymore, which means both for the case where they took it for an obligation, a loan obligation, or where they confiscated it just because they felt like it, in both those instances, he doesn't have control anymore. He might have ownership, but not control. In addition to that, he may not even have ownership anymore, and that's because he was mityayesh. He gave up. He doesn't think he's getting this stuff back. He has no hope of getting it back. And therefore, he might even not have monetary control over here. Because of that, the Chaznish over here suggests that the necessity to pay masrot off of this is a din derabonon. Because midoraita, you can't be mechayevim on something that is outside of his control and outside of his ownership. Because now he has yeush, and they have control over it. Why does he have to pay mas there? There are others who want to suggest that his ownership is still there. You don't have to say there's yeush, but there is a lack of control, and maybe there is possibly an obligation still midoraita to pay the trumot to masrot. But that is definitely an argument about the nature of the obligation when he is paying it back bechovo. Nobody believes that banporot, if it's confiscated and totally taken away, there nobody thinks that he has to pay trumot to masrot. Now here again, why does he have to compensate for it? According to Rav Chista, when you damage the maser or you eat the maser of matnot kuna, you don't have to repay it. This is no different than that. Here, you're paying your chov with it. It's equivalent of being mazik, the matnot kuna, when you pay off your chov with it. You're using it for personal benefit, as if you ate it, as if you damaged it, and you don't have to compensate. Why over here do you have to pay the maser? The Gemara says, shani hotam kat deka mishtarshe lei. Over here, he's getting personal benefit from it, which is that in lieu of the maser, he would have had to make monetary compensation for the debt that was outstanding. When he gives the maser, he then keeps the money. So there's a tangible benefit to him from the trumot masrot over here, as opposed to the case of mazik, matnot kuna, when you damage them, or when you eat them, then you don't have to make compensation. To which Tosafot says right away, well, if you eat them, why isn't that a tangible benefit? If paying the loan is a tangible benefit, eating them should also be a tangible benefit, because it's in lieu of what you would have eaten of your own property. You ate this instead. So it's saving you the money. It's the same types of savings that you have when you repay the loan. So Tosafot says something very interesting. He says, there, it supplanted what he would have to pay from his own pocket. When you eat it, maybe you're not getting benefits. Who says he would have eaten? Maybe he ate because he had it here. Had he not had it, he would have just fasted. He would have afflicted himself, meaning that eating is somewhat subjective, as well as how much you eat is also a question mark. You might eat more because you have more available to you. If you have less available to you, you might just eat less. So there's no real association where you can say that there really is a tangible connection between what you ate from here versus what you would have eaten from your own property. Maybe if you didn't have this, you just wouldn't have eaten. You would have skipped that meal. So Dostavod says it's not as tangible a benefit as the repayment of the loan, which is something that's always outstanding and you would have to deal with. All right, Tashma. Amar lo mechorli b'nei me'ah shel para. Sell me the innards, the intestines, the pupik of the animal. Vayaben matnot kuna. Subsumed in there are the matnot kuna, which is the keva, which belongs to the kohen. Notanan le kohen, veinu menachelo min adamim. The tabach, as we're going to see later on, the butcher, the shochet, is the one who's really obligated to give it to the kohen. We'll see the reasons for that in tomorrow's daf. But for right now, the tabach who's selling the item to someone, someone who came and bought the intestines, the innards of the animal, and he sold it to him. Then he takes out the keva and hands it to the kohen. He does not have to deduct anything from the purchase price because the person who purchased it knew that that was a part of the innards and that was going to go to the kohen. There's no deception over here. There's no question that he paid for whatever he thought he was going to get. And what he thought he was going to get is everything that's not owed to the kohen. L'kachem enu b'mishkal. If he bought it by weight, notanan the kohen, u'menachelo min adamim. Then he gives it to the kohen, and now he has to deduct it from the price. When you're selling it by weight, it's clearly the weight of the item that he's going to take home, not the weight of the item that he has to give to the kohen. So, amai, again, why does he have to compensate here? Why does he have to give back the money? Labi kemazik matnot kuna. Again, it should be the equivalent of damaging the matnot kuna, osha achlan, eating them. So the lokeach, the purchaser over here, has to hand off the keba to the kohen. He can demand from the mocher to give him the compensation. Why is it now that he has to pay or compensate for the fact, because he quote unquote stole it? Again, it should be the equivalent of damaging the matnot kuna, osha achlan. Where it says, shani hotam, didu beinayu. Very easy to see a distinction in this case. The cases of Rav Chisda are hamazik, you damaged it, or you ate it. That means it's no longer extant. It's not here anymore. That's why you don't have to compensate because you got rid of it. In this instance, the keva is still sitting right here. So you can't say, oh, you damaged it, you stole it, you ate it. It's here physically. He can give it to the kohen. In that case, we're going to force you to make compensation for it or take care of it because of the fact that it's still extant. It's right in front of us. It's a different story once it's no longer there. In those situations, then compensation is different rather than just handing the actual item that belongs to the kohen to the kohen. So even though the lokeach, the purchaser over here, has to hand off the keba to the kohen, he can demand from the mocher to give him the compensation because even though he quote-unquote stole it, it's nevertheless extant. And being extant means you've got to give it to the kohen and he'll have to make compensation for it. Tashma, tisha nichsei kohen. There are 9 things that belong to the kohen that are his personal possession once he receives them. There are numerous girsaot with regards to this. You can just take a quick peek in the Tosafot. It says, Halkei Garsinan, Perish Rabbeinu Chananel, shiva nichsei kohen. There are actually 7 nichsei kohen. Rashi brings a different girsa that says there are 15 nichsei hakohen. So the question is, what is the determining factor over here for what is inside of this list? There are, as we'll see later on, 24 matnot kehuna. Question is, how is this a subset of those 24? They're different or differentiated in some way than the other ones, which we have to determine. Once you do that, you can figure out what the number is that should be here, whether it's 15, 9, or 7. Our Gemara has the girsa of tisha nichsei kohen, which are truma is 1, trumat maser is 2, Chala is 3. Reshita Gez is 4. Reshita Gez's next perek is the first of the shearings. Number 5 is the matanot, which is our perek, Hazaroa, Valechayayim, and the keva. Demai is number 6. Vabikurim is number 7. Vakeren is number 8. And Vachomesh is number 9. So these are the 9 things that are listed. Lamai, what does it mean that they are the possession of the kohen? Lavlo tzian b'dayanim. Isn't it sound like they can go and make a monetary claim on it? Why else would that mean? Nichsei kohen. It's your possession. That means you have a right to go make a claim for it and demand that it be paid. It says, lo, that's not the reason. Lichedit nan. This is the reason, as we find in the Mishnah in Bikurim. Lama amru nichsei kohen. what it exactly means that it's the Nichsei HaKohen. What is this differentiated from Matnot Kuna Nichsei HaKohen? Shekoneh Behen Avadim V'Karkot U'Behemat Me'ah, meaning there's so much so, his own personal property, that he can use them to purchase Eved Kenani, land. He can purchase a non-kosher animal. U'Bal Chov, Nodan B'Chovo, the creditor can come and take them or foreclose on them for his claim. B'Shav K'tubata, and his wife can take it as a claim for her K'tubah. The Sefer Torah, and you can also use it for purchase of a Sefer Torah. Rashi says that Libi Migam Gein, says I'm very circumspect about the fact that they added in here Sefer Torah. He says, what's unique about a Sefer Torah? You can already use it to buy a non-kosher animal. Of course you can use it to buy a Sefer Torah. And therefore he says, I'm not really sure why Sefer Torah is listed here. What's unique about that, that you would say is differentiated from any other item that's mentioned here that he can spend the money on? You can spend the money, or it can be taken. It's viewed as totally his own possession. So if you look in the Mishnah Bikurim, the Rash Mishan says an alternate girsa, which is Kis Sefer Torah, to tell you that just like you can foreclose on the Matnot Kuna, the Nichsei Kohen, you also can foreclose on a Sefer Torah. Or the Rosh says that the explanation is that the Sefer Torah is unique in the fact that it doesn't produce any profits, and it's not edible. The other items either are edible themselves, food items, or they produce sechar that can be used towards food items. The Sefer Torah does neither of those, and the Chiddush is that still Nichsei HaKohen to purchase even a Sefer Torah. The Gemara thought the Havamina was, it was Nichsei HaKohen to the point where he could come and make a claim on it, take you to court, and force you to give it up. The Gemara says, no, that's not what it's for. It's telling you that when the Kohen already has it in his possession, he can do what he likes with it. That's what it means, Nichsei HaKohen. Rashi over here says, V'lo yadat de'echan shnuya, this brayta that's brought in the Gemara, I have no clue where it's from. U'bisvarim ein ha'ktuva b'shaveh. Rashi's already telling us. He's seeing Kitvei Yad, and they have different versions in it. Motzeani tetvav matanot kuna, gulay nechsei kohen l'sul b'hem kol tzrachav. There are 15 of the matanot kuna, which means 15 out of the 24, where the kohen has a monetary right to do with them as he pleases. As opposed to certain kodoshim, where there's a demand that the kohen eat them in a certain place, treat them in a certain manner, that they're not his monetary ownership to do as he pleases with them. And now he lists them. Hachuma, Trumat Maser, which are mentioned in the Dar Braita, Utrumat Maser Shel Dumai, Vehachala, Vabikurim, Reshita Geiz, Matanot Shel Chulin, Veshel Kodoshim, Vakaren, Vachomesh, Shel Gezel Ager, Ustei Achuza, Ustei Charamim, Ubechor Bamum, Upidjon Oben, Upidjon Petar Chamor. Because I have 15 things listed over here. How does that match up with the 9 that we have here? So Rashi deals with it and says, "Benir bein I shu kulan shnuimba." All of those 15 are subsumed in the 9 that we mention here. B'chashiv truma utrumat maser v'ademai v'chala kechado the kulo truma ninhu. They are all considered to be truma, so they're subsumed under a single category. So that either could explain our version actually separates out truma, trumat maser, and demai. It's a little more problematic. The Rach's version, which has 7. Was a even shorter version that might fit according to what Rashi is saying here. They made it all into truma. Ubechor pidyon ben pidyon petar chamor kechado. Bechor they list all as one item, even though there are different manifestations of it. Pidyon ben pidyon petar chamor and regular bechor. The keren bechomesh the gezel ager chado. And also if you take the keren bechomesh of the gezel ager, they subsume that in a single category of gezel ager. And that repayment is also something that is mentioned here separately in our list. So depending on how much you consolidate the names into single categories, we'll give you different enumerations here as to what is classified as Nichsei HaKohen. So Rashi is trying to deal with the 15 out of the 24 he knows for sure are classified as Nichsei HaKohen to do with them as he pleases. Then from that, he now says, how do I get the lists of 9 or 7 filtering them down to those numbers? By Tosafot, give a different logic behind that. And he says, says, first of all, the qualification over here is that they have to be something that is a sur for a zar, but they're still the money of the Kohen. There's certain items that are the money of the Kohen, but they're not a sur the zarim, including the matanot of our perek, where they are chulin legamre, in terms of if a non-Kohen eats them, it's not a problem. It's not an asur the zarim. Truma is a sur to a zar, even though it's Mamona Kohen. So what Tosfot says is the list here only counts or enumerates items that are uniquely a sur to zarim But the Mamon HaKohen or Nikseh is going to do what he wants. The Choshiv Matanot. The problem is, like I just said, Zroa Ve'alechayayim and the Keba are items that are Mutar Lezarim and they're Nikseh Kohen. So why are they in this list here? They shouldn't be in the list according to Tosafot's qualifications. Shum Ditavle V'damu L'Truma. That's because in tomorrow's daf, Gemara is going to indicate that there is a Deya that when you leave the matanot in the animal, they make it into tevel, and you're not allowed to eat the behemah, kulin. Once you separate them out, even if the tzar eats them, it's not a problem. But until you separate them out, it has a din of tevel, and therefore they're like truma. So that's one day on the Gemara. So Tosafot says, based on that day, maybe it's concluded here, because it looks like truma and acts like truma, that it makes the item into tevel. Because there's an iser to eat from such an animal that didn't have the matanot taken off of them, even though the matanot are mutar lezarim. Inami, lo choshiv ela mide de barachila. It only includes here things that are edible items. So then, in that list, you would leave out gezel ager, the stei charamim, stei achuza, which are all matnot kuna, that are his possession, but they're not items that he eats. Those are monetary items that are given to him, or pidyon bechor. That's money that's given to him, it's not an edible item. Bahad lo choshiv bechor, what the fact that bechor is not mentioned here, shum dakati lav barachiluhu, shetzarich shchita. Because it does not shecht it yet. In its current state, it's not a ochel for him. Because it has to go through another process before it reaches the point of ochel. I think he could have argued even maybe it doesn't have a mum in it yet. And bizman hazeh, if it doesn't have a mum in it yet and it belongs in the mizbeach, you can't do anything with it until it gets a mum in it. That might be another way to deal with it. But interestingly enough, they're all trying to deal with where did this number 9 come from? Where did this number 7 or 15? How do you deal with them? So Rashi, the Baalei HaTosafot, are trying to come up with a way to give you an understanding as to which items were picked to be in this list. This Levi was coming around and confiscating, absconding with the Matnot Kuhuna, or the Matnot Kuhuna here, or the Matnot, which is the generic term for the Zroa Velechayayim and the Keba. So generally, Matnot Kuhuna has a very broad meaning, which is that all 24 Matnot Kuhuna. Over here, in our perek, and when it's just used, not generically, but to specify a particular one of the matanot kuna, the matanot are the zroa lechayayim and the keba. So he's walking off with these items. Atu, amr le the rav. So they report this to rav. Amr le, lo mistaye de lo shaklinamina. It's not enough that we don't take it from him. El mikhtach nami chotif. He's taking from other people. Meaning that he also has animals that he's shechting, and he's not giving up his matanot over here. He's not giving up his rav, elechayayim, and keba. Not only is he not giving up his own animals, now he's taking from other animals, and as if he's a kohen. So Gemara says, virav, how do we deal with Rav's statement over here? So obviously his taking from others is problematic. But Rav suggests over here, we're not forcing him to disgorge his matanot kuna. Why aren't we forcing it? Or why did Rav say we're not doing it? Or why aren't we forcing it? Or why should we have forced it? So that has to do with the source of the need to give matanot, which is the pasuk in Devarim Yudchet, pasuk Gimel, v'zeyeh mishpat ha-kohanim me'et ha'am. This is what the kohanim get from the nation. Me'et zobchei ha-zevach, from the one who does the shechita. This will be the source for the fact that the butcher is the one who has to ensure the matanot are given, because it's me'et zobchei ha-zevach. Im shorim se, v'natan la-kohen, hazroa, v'lechayayim, v'akeba. So the question, which is what the Gemara is about to say, is the Kohanim get this from the Am. Who is the Am that is obligated to give it? And that is Rav. Iikrei Am, if the Levi'im are subsumed under the category of Am, mishkol nami lishkol minayu. Why are we only worried about what he's taking illegally? We should force him to disgorge what he has of his own animals and force him to pay it. Iloikrei Am, if he is not an Am, then Rachmana Patrinu. Why is Rav saying we didn't take it from him? Of course he didn't take it from him because he's not obligated to give it. So what is Rav doing over here? Either he is Chayav and we should force him to give it up, or he's not Chayav, and why is Rav even mentioning the fact that he doesn't give his own? My answer is Misapkale. Rav had a question, Ikreyam, Ilo Ikreyam. He doesn't know where Shevet Levi or Levim fit in this picture. Are they subsumed under the name Am in the Pasuk? Or are they separate from the Am in the Pasuk? We'll see later in today's daf. It's actually a machloket Tanaim as to whether the Levim are subsumed under the category called Am. Yativ Rapapa, Rekamra La'alahash Maitata. So Rapapa was saying over this memra, Eitve Ravidi Barabin Rapapa. Now Ravidi Barabin challenges Rapapa. Arba Matanot Aniim Shibikerim. In a vineyard, the Aniim are entitled to four things in the vineyard. Haperet, Vaholulot, Vashikha, Vapeya. Like it is small parts that fall out while he's being kotzer. When they're collecting it up, it falls out. Peret is the equivalent of leket by the kerem. So it's the same thing as leket, it's just called peret. It's the small ones that fall away from the one who's picking them at the time that they're picking them. And so they have the same din, they just call something different by tvuah versus that of a kerem. The ololot are the something that does not have ketef and netef. It doesn't have a bunch of grapes together in a unit. They're bodedim, scattered around. Vashikha, that which is forgotten. And vapeya, the corner of the field. Here, peya would be the vines that you leave over in the vineyard. Now, these are four matanot that are associated with the kerem. Shalosh shebitvua, they only have three matanot aniim. Leket, shikha, and peya. Leket is the stuff that dropped, stuff that's left behind in the fields you'll have to take. Shikha is that which you forgot when you were working with it. Vapeya is the corner, again, that's left over. So tvua only has three out of the four because it doesn't have this ololot, which is unique to the grapes, which is that you have these bodudim, these singular grapes, or these non-bunches of grapes. Those have to be left over. Shnayim shebi ilan. A tree, fruit trees, have two. Shikha and peya, that which you forgot. And leaving over the corner of the field. Kulam ein behem tovat ana lebalim. All of these matnot aniim, the owner has no rights over here. Meaning that he does not have the right to give it to the ani. The ani has the right to come and take it. These are matnot that are left in the field. And the ani comes and takes them at his own volition and his own time. And the balim only have to just leave it. They can't actively give it. They can't actually pick it up and hand it to the aniim or take it for a particular ani. But filo ani should be Yisrael motzim yado. And even a poor person who has a field, he has to leave these matnot aniim. Maaser ani, hamitzchalek betoch beito. Maaser ani, which is distributed in the house, yesh bo tovat ana lebalim. There the balim have a right to determine which ani it goes to. They're distributing the maaser ani. It's in their control to give it up. Bafilu ani b'shebi Yisrael motzin oto miyado. And again, if a poor person has maaser ani, we're going to force him to give the maaser ani. He can't keep it for himself. He has to give the maaser ani. Just like he has to leave over the matanot aniim in his field, and he can't take them for himself. Bishar matanot kuna, and the remainder of the matanot kuna, kigon, for example, haziroa valechayayim vakeba, ein motzin otan miyado, we don't take them out of his possession, lomi kohen lekohen, velomi levi lelevi, not from a kohen to a kohen, and not from a levi to a levi. Right, that's the end of the braita. Now the Gemara is going to go back through the braita and discuss each section of the braita. Arba matanot shebikerem. Four matanot in the kerem were the peret, which was the equivalent of the leket, ha'ololot, which are the bodudim, the singular grapes that are there, a shikha, that's what you forgot. When you were harvesting, you passed by something, and you're not going to come back there because you have your back to it. Now, that's already considered shikha, you're not allowed to go back to it. Va'peyam, and that which you have to leave over. Dichtiv, what is the source for this? So now we bring the psukim that indicate that there is such an obligation, which is in Vayikra Yutet. It says pasuk yud v'charmecha lo te'olel uperet karmecha lo te'laket. So there you have ololot and peret. You have the karmecha lo te'olel, don't clear it out, and uperet karmecha lo te'laket, that which fell away from you, don't go back and pick it up. Lani v'lager tozobotam ani Hashem lokechem. So there you have to leave them for the ani, for the ger and the ani to collect them. So that's a karmecha. And it mentions ololot and peret. So that's one source. Uchtiv. And then it also says in Devarim, ki tivzor karmecha. When you are harvesting your kerem, lo to'olel acharecha. To'olel is again ololot mentioned again. Acharecha. The word acharecha means don't go back. Amar Rebbe Levi, acharecha zu shichecha. So that's the equivalent of shichecha, because acharecha means that which is behind you, don't go back and get it. Shichecha means that when you're moving forward, if you pass something and you forgot about it, you don't have the right to go back, you leave it for the aniim. So that is the shichecha acharecha. And then peya, gemar acharecha, acharecha mizayit. And peya, which we don't have a source for by kerem, That's learning a Gezer Shava from Acharecha by the Zayit, which is the Pasuk before. In Parshat Ki Teitzeh, it says, Ki Tachbot Zeitecha, when you harvest your olive tree, Lo Tifa'er Acharecha. Acharecha, again, is the Shechecha. Lo Tifa'er means don't take away the Pe'er. The Pe'er is the beauty or the thing that gives it a sense of status. Tichtiv, Ki Tachbot Zeitecha, Lo Tifa'er Acharecha. Don't take its glory away from it. And Rashi on the next Talmud says, from Eov, it says that they took all of my grains and they uprooted it and they basically ruined the field. So you see that the pe'er of the field is when you leave it still rooted in the field, still standing there. So to ruin the field is to uproot it or to take things away. The pe'er of the field is when it's in full growth and full maturity and the things are still there. So lo tefa'er acharecha means don't take away the pe'er of the field. Leave some of the growth of the field intact. And that's what pe'ah is. If you leave a corner of the field where you don't harvest it at all, you leave it completely intact. So based on that, now we have the four matnot aniim that are associated with the kerem. Now we move on to shlosha shibitvua. The three that are mentioned by tvua is a leket, hashikha, va'pe'ah. Dichtiv, because once again, in Parshat Emor, it says, Ubikutzurchem ekitzir artzachem, that's tvua. Lo techale pa'atzadecha bikutzrecha. Don't finish off the peyah, that's your peyah. The leket kirtzacha, lo telaket. That's leket. So those two you have. Lani velager tazobutam. So that's your source for the peyah and the leket. And then you need the source for the shichacha, which is found in Dvarim Chavdalid, which is ki tiktzor kitzircha besadecha vishachachta omer besadeh lo tashuv lakachto lager liyatom v'amana iye v'mani v'rechach Hashem lakecha mechom asayadecha. So there you have shechacha specifically mentioned by tvuah. Shechacha comes actually in two forms. The one that's mentioned there, which is the ba'omer, that is when you have piles in the field, the sheaves that are bound in the field. If you forget them when you're bringing them into the, whether it's the threshing floor or the silo, you leave some in the field, that's called shechacha. There's also a shechacha while you're harvesting. If you're moving down the roads and you're harvesting and you miss a spot, you can't go back to that spot. Now, if you would naturally go back to that spot because you're coming down the other way and you're going to come back to it, that's not shechacha. Shechacha, as Rashi says, is zeaklau koshu bebal tashuv. Anything which is requires you to go back, that's called shechacha already. So if you wouldn't have gone back to it anyway, I mean, if you're naturally going to end up there anyway, that's not called baal teshuv. But if you're past that point already, that's called shechacha. So those are two forms of shechacha, and both of them apply to the items that are mentioned here. That's in terms of tfuah. Shnayim shebi'ilan, the two by the tree, are shechacha and peyah. Dichtiv, that's the pasuk that we read before that we learned from by the zayit, ki tachbod zeitecha, lo tifa'er acharecha, lager le'yatom v'yamana yeh. So over there you have lo tefayer acharecha v'tana debei rishmal shelo tiltel tifarto mimenu. Don't take its glory from it, which means leave it intact. That's the peyah. And acharecha, we already said, is to go back. That's shechacha. So that's how you have those two matanot with regards to a tree. Now v'chulan ein ben tovat ana lebalim. All of them do not have rights to the balim to give them. My taima. What's the reason? Aziva k'tiva behu. The verb that is used in terms of these matanot is azov, leave it. It's not titain. When you have to give, then you have the rights of tovat hana'a, which is if you have the right to give it to whomever you choose. Lazov means leave it, and someone else is going to come and take it. Now that works by some of the psukim. For instance, like, v'char mechalo to'olel, peret kar mechalo to'olel, v'aniv lager, tazov otam, ani Hashem elkechem. Or, in v'yik chav gimel, u'bikur tzachem, ekitzir atzachem, lo techale patzadcha b'kutzrecha, leket kirtzecha lo telekeit, lani v'lager, tazov otam, ani Hashem elokeichem. So there again you have aziva. In Dvarim, the psukim don't have a azov, but rather they have a yeh. In Dvarim it says, ki tachvot zeitcha, lo tefayar acharecha, lager, layetom v'almana, yeh. Ki tibziru karmecha, lo teolel acharecha, lager, layetom v'almana, yeh. So Rashi says that the yeah over here is a substitute for the tazov, and therefore hanach namik tibu yeah hainu baziva damashm b'havyato yehei. The way they are now, they shall remain. There is no nitina, there is no giving. That is going to be in contrast to maser, where there's a necessity to give it. How do we know that you have to give it to an ani dichtiv? Veleket kitzircha lo tilaket la ani velager tazov otam ani Hashem elokeichem. From there, lazhir ani al shelo. To tell you the ani is obligated to give these matnot. Limud probably comes from the fact of the order of the pasuk, as Rashi says. Because it could have said, leket kitzircha lo tilaket tazov otam la ani velager. The fact that it flipped and put ani in between the tazov otam and lo tilaket tells you that lo tilaket goes on ani as well. Lo tilaket is not just you don't take it, also the ani lo tilaket. Even the ani may not collect it, so the ani is read in both directions. The tazov is modifying the ani, and lo tilaket is also. The ani is subject to both verbs. You may not collect it, as well as you have to leave it. And so you leave it for the ani himself may not take it. Therefore he's obligated to give those matnot kuna as well. Umaser ani hamitkalek betoch habayit, maaser ani that's given in the house, yesh bo tovat ana lebalim. The Balim have a right to distribute it to wherever they choose. Tosafot on the previous Amud says that there are two types of maaser ani. There's maaser ani in the goren. That's maaser ani when you're out in the threshing floor. Over there, it has the same din as the other matnot aniim. You have to leave it. You have no tovat ana. The only time you have tovat ana is when you bring it into the house and then you want to distribute it. And Tosafot says the difference is what's the weather like outside. If it's the winter time and it's raining outside, and if you leave it out in the goren, it's going to get ruined, then you bring it into the house. And once you brought it into the house, you have a right to distribute it to whomever you choose. If it's the summertime where it can be left out in the field, it has the same din as the other matnot aniim, and you have to be tazov. You have to leave it. That way, Tosafot deals with a stira between what seems to be in the Gemara Nidarim that says that which is distributed in the granot, the Balim have no rights to. Whereas our Gemara here says that you have a right to distribute it. And Tosafot brings that in the Sifrei, they learn it out of the Psukim. And from those Psukim, they come up with this distinction as to when you do have a right or you don't have a right to distribute it. And the reason that you have such a right is because, my taima, nitina ktivbe. Because there it says nitina. That's what I said. You're contrasting tazov and iyeh with what's written by Maaser Rishon. It says, ki techaleh, laseret kol maaser tzvuatcha, v'shana shlishit, shnat amaser, v'natata lalevi, lager, leyatom, v'almana, v'achlu b'sharecha, v'saveyu. Over there it says, v'natata. Nitina is your right to distribute it or give it to whomever you want. That's one pasuk that's found by Maaser. There is another pasuk that is found by Maaser Rishon, where there is no nitina, and that's what Tosafot said, the Sifrei Darshins, that one pasuk speaking about in the Goren, and one pasuk speaking about in the Bayit. This pasuk that's found in Kitavo is talking about at the end of the 3 years, when you have to disgorge all the matnot that you haven't given out properly, that you have to give natata. That's clearly in the house. You've now taken everything in. This could be a year after, 2 years after, and you were supposed to give it, so now you have to distribute it. So that is v'natata. There you have a right of nitina. That which you have in the fields, there's no din of nitina, but rather, you just have to leave it. V'anachta. You have to leave it there for the aniyim. So that's number one. Number two is tovat hana'a. The question of what does it mean, tovat hana'a? This is a machloket in Shas as to whether tovat hana'a is mamon or not mamon. Does it have real monetary value or is it not real monetary value? What the tovat hana'a is seemingly just something where you get goodwill from it. When you pick to give it to this coin instead of that coin, the coin that you gave it to will have goodwill towards you because you chose him and you, quote unquote, enriched him by giving him this matanat kuna, or same thing with the matanat to the levi or to the ani. The tovat hana'a is the goodwill that you engender by giving it to this individual. Rashi over here and the Balei Tosafot mention an idea that you could actually take compensation for it, which is that you could have, for instance, the brother-in-law of the ani come to you and say, listen, take this shekel and give it to my brother-in-law instead of to another ani. From your perspective, you're indifferent in terms of your own personal wealth because you're going to give this up anyway. The only question is whom you're going to give it to. In that sense, if I can garner a little compensation for it, maybe I would change my mind about whom I'm giving it to. It's not worth that much to me. It's worth a little bit of goodwill. So Rashi indicates over here that you would give a coin to someone in order to sway their decision in this situation to decide where it will go. The Gemara continues, Va'afilu ani mishel motzim oto miyado. But ma'aser ani, we also force the ani to disgorge it and give it out. Damar Rabbi Ilo, gamar lager mehatam. So you learn from ger, gzer shava from there. Malalan muzarani al shelo. Avkan muzarani al shelo. Just like over there, he had to give it up. So too, over here, he has to give it up. So that's the pasuk that we said before. In Emor, it says, ukutzrechem ekzeratzechem, lo techale patzadecha, bikutzrecha, veleke kutzrecha, lo telakeit, leani, telager tazovotam, ani Hashem elokeichem. So there we learn from that the ani is obligated, but there the word ger is mentioned. In Parshat Ki Tavo, it says, ki techale laseret kol masar tevuatcha, shana shlishit, shnata maser, venatata levi, lager, layetom v'almana, v'achlu b'sherecha zaveyu. Lager, lager, that's found both in Emor and Ki Tavo, Gzer Shava. And just like over there in Emor, with regards to the Peah and the Leket, the Ani is obligated to give them up. So to over here, the Natata, that's found in Ki Tavo, to give the Maaser Ani, so too the Ani is obligated to give it. So we will enforce that the Ani also give all the Matnot Aniim from his property, even though he's an Ani. And technically, you could just say, oh, I'll keep it for myself. That doesn't work. There's an obligation to separate out the matnot aniim, allow others to come and take from it, or in the case of the maaser ani, to give it out to other aniim. He can't keep it for himself. That's based on these psukim over here that you must give it. So that's in terms of all the background to get to the question. Here is finally the question, which is the last line of the braita, which presents us with a problem. Shar matnot kuna, the remaining matnot kuna, kagon, hazeroa, velechayayim, vakeba. You don't have to get them from one Kohen to another Kohen, but let me Levi the Levi. And you don't force a Levi to disgorge it to another Levi. Ha! The deal you would make out of here is, Levi the Kohen, Motzi'in. If it was from a Levi to a Kohen, we would force him to give it up. Alma, Ikruam. Therefore, you can see from this that the Levim are called the Am. If they're called an Am, they're obligated to give the Matanot. And then, why did Rav have a Safek? This Braita seems pretty clear. That if you have a Kohen versus a Levi, we're going to force the Levi to give it to the Kohen. Gemara says, Kegon has Zroa, velo Zroa. It's like the Zroa, but not the Zroa. Meaning, similar to the Zroa, lechayayim in Keba, but not the Zroa, lechayayim in Keba. Umayinu, what's that? Maiserishon. That's what we're going to force the Levi to give up to the Kohen. Maiserishon, the Levi who? Wait a minute. Maaserishon belongs to the Levi. What do you mean you're forcing the Levi to give it up to the Kohen? It's the Levi's to keep. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. It's like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the Tanya. We have a machloket in the Gemara in Yevamot. Machloket Tanaim. Truma la Kohen, maaserishon la Levi. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Akiva's view is, the min haTorah, the Truma is given to the Kohen. The Truma and the Trumat Maaser go to the Kohen. The maaserishon goes to the Levi. That's the way we paskin. That's the way that we practice. That goes to the Kohen, goes to the Levi. Belazim ben Azariah omer, af le Kohen. Maaser Rishon can go to the Levi and also to the Kohen. The reason behind Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's position is that Kohanim, 24 places in Tanakh are called Levim. Kohanim are just a subset of Bnei Levi. So the question that's really being asked over here and the machloke between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is Kohanim are Levim. They're from Shevet Levi. When you become a Kohen, are you a Levi plus? Or are you a Kohen and not a Levi anymore? According to Rabbi Kiva, you're just a Kohen now. You no longer have the status of a Levi. You're not entitled to the Maaser Rishon. Now then, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, when you're a Kohen, you're a Levi plus. The Torah calls Kohanim Levim a whole bunch of places because they are B'nai Levi. So then you're a Levi plus. If that's the case, you have entitlement to that which the Kohen has, plus you have entitlement to that which the Levi would get. So Gemara says, okay, Imar Damar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah af le Kohen. Okay, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, you can even give it to a Kohen. A Levi, you can give it to, or you can give it to a Kohen. But, le Kohen, velo le Levi, mi Amar? Who says that you can force the Levi to give it up to the Kohen? Why can't the Levi keep it for himself? Why does he have to disgorge it and give it to a Kohen? The Kohen is also entitled to it, but the Levi himself is also entitled to it. Or he's the primary entitled party here. So Gemara says, in. The Batar de Kansinu Ezra. It was after the Knas of Ezra. Ezra imposed a fine on the Levi'im because they did not come up when they made Aliyah from Babel. As is enumerated in Ezra and Nehemiah for the Gemara and for Rashi, there were not two Sfarim. There was no Ezra and Nehemiah. It was all Ezra. It's all called one Ezra. You'll see many times, like including our Gemara here, Rashi will quote a pasuk from Nehemiah and call it Ezra. Because there's only one sefer called Ezra for Rashi. And he'll say at the tail end of Ezra, which is really Nehemiah, he quotes a pasuk. So now, Ezra, when they were coming up to Eretz Yisrael from Babel, takes a census of the people that he's taking up. In Ezra Perichet, it says, Ve'ekab tseim el nara ba el ahava, ve'nachanesham yamim shlosha. We camped there for 3 days on our way up to Eretz Yisrael. Va'evina ba'am, uba kohanim. I looked around the people that were there and the kohanim. Umimnei levi lo matzati sham. I didn't find any levim. So the Gemara there discusses what exactly happened after that point, that Ezra was kones. He fined the Levim, because the Levim couldn't be bothered to show up and make Aliyah. He imposed a knas on them and gave the matnot of the Levim to someone else. The question of who that other party is a machloket over there, but nevertheless, the Gemara here is following that shita that it was given up to the Kohanim. Since the Levim didn't show up, he gave it to the Kohanim. Rashi says he doesn't know where this knas is mentioned in Tanakh, but he says maybe at the end of Ezra, which is in Nehemiah Yud, there is a pasuk there that seems to hint at it, and he says, "Vaya kohen ben Aaron ima leviim baser haleviim," that the kohen would supervise the leviim when the leviim were taking off the maser. "Valeviim yalu et maser beit elukenu elishkod beit otzar." Then they used to give up the trumat maser to the kohenim. Now, what you see from the pasuk is that the leviim were not trusted with regards to taking off the trumat maser. And Rashi says, maybe over here it's also a hint at the fact that they weren't entitled to the Maaser Rishon, and that's why the Kohanim were supervising to make sure that they disgorged the Maaser Rishon, even though later on there were the Levim that joined the Kahal in Eretz Yisrael. It's not clearly indicative of the fact that the Levim didn't get the Maaser Rishon, but it is clear that they weren't trustworthy, and the question of whether that lack of trustworthiness had to do with the fact that they really weren't entitled to it, and the Kohanim were coming to make sure that they got what belonged to them. So Rashi says there's a hint in there to that idea, but it's not necessarily definitive proof to this concept that the Gemara is mentioning. So because of that, the Kohen is entitled and not the Levi, and that'll be the way to explain the Braita. Gemara says, Imar tekansinu Ezra to lo yavinu lohu. The Knas is that we will not give it to the Levi, but Mishkal minayu miamar. Who says that we force him to disgorge it? It's true the Levi is not entitled to take it from someone else, but it doesn't mean that he himself has to give it up. There you say, or you would say that the Levi is entitled to it. He can keep what's his. Ella, so you have to come up with a different answer. Kigon zroa, below zroa. It's like the zroa lechayayim and keba, but not exactly them. Umaynehu, reshita geiz. So reshita geiz, which belongs to the Kohen, that we're going to force the Levi to give up. The Levi is not entitled to reshita geiz. He has to give it up. There it's clear that he has to give it to the Kohen. Because as Rashi says, by Reshita Geiz, Atam Loktiv Am, over there the word Am is not mentioned, which means that there's no question that the Levim are included in those that have to give it to the Kohen. And even if they're not called the Am, they might still be Chayav in that case, because the word Am is not mentioned. The reason by Reshita Geiz you don't have this question is because it doesn't specify the giver. By the matnot of the Zerah Lechayayim Kiva, it specifies the Am is the giver. Over there you have the question is whether Levi is subsumed under the Am or not. In the case of Reshita Geiz, it just says you have to give the Reshita Geiz to the Kohen. There's no question that anybody who has Reshita Geiz will have to give it to the Kohen. And so there's no safek that the Levi has to give it. The Baal Yitosfot point out, it's not so far-fetched what the Gemara is doing over here. Gemara says, matnot kuna kigon. Like Zroa Lechayayim and Keba. Now, if the matnot that you were speaking about in that Braita were Zroa Lechayim and Keba, why did you say Kigon? Just say, Matnot Akuna has Zroa Lechayim and Keba, or just say Zroa Lechayayim and Keba. You just say them straight out. The fact that it says Kigon is telling you that Zroa Lechayayim and Keba are not the item. It's something similar to them. And that's what the Gemara is pointing out over here. At first we thought maybe it's Maaser Rishon, and then we moved over to say that it is Reshita Geiz. Even though it seems a little bit stretched, nevertheless, it isn't so crazy to say that that's what the Braita meant because of the fact that it used kigon. Kigon is an indication that we're not looking for that particular item, we're looking for something similar to that item. And Tosfot says, then, why didn't it just write explicitly, Maaser Rishon or Reshita Geiz? The reason the Braitha used this type of cryptic language is so that you don't get a mistaken impression. Had you written Maaser Rishon, you would have thought that means it applies to all Matanot Kuna, not just this particular Matanot Kuna. So that's why I mentioned Zroa L'Chayayim and Keba, and also used the word Kigon to tell you it's not that, but something else. So it's something similar to it, but we're not writing what that item is, because of the fact that if we did, you would think it applies to all Matanot Kuna. And therefore, we're still left with a Safek of Rav, as to whether the Levim are subsumed under the Am in this case. And that's why we don't know whether we can force this Levi to have to give up the Zra, the Chayayim, and Keba that he was holding on to. Tashma, Zaklal, Kol Davar Shu B'Kedusha, anything that has Kedusha, as Rashi notes over here, what does it mean, Kedusha? That means any time it's Asur L'Zarim, when a Zar cannot eat it. Kegon, Truma, Utrumat Maser, Vechala, which are all types of Truma that a Zar is Asur in. Motzino Tami Adam, there you can force the people to disgorge them. Chol davar she'enu b'kedusha, anything that does not have kedusha, meaning that it's not asur zarim, kegon hazroa velachayim ve'akeba, like the matnot kuna, ein motzino tami adam, then we don't force them to disgorge it. So now again, it sounds like we're talking about Shevet Levi over here. In regards to Shevet Levi, we do force them to give up things that are asur zarim and give them to the kohanim. But things that are not asur zarim, we don't force them to give up. And with the example that Braita brings is Zroa, the Chayayim, and Keba. It seems that the question from here is that we're not forcing the Levi to give up the Zroa, the Chayayim, and Keba. So that would seem to be a question as to why it is that we're not, which would make it obvious that you don't have an entitlement to this item. That's the way Rashi seems to form the question. The Baal Tosfot would say, wait a minute, what's the question on Rav from this Braita? Rav said we don't force him to give it up because it's a Safek. You could say the same thing about the Braita over here. The Braita over here also says, I don't force the Levi to give it up. Maybe the reason the Braita is saying that is for the same reason Rav did, which is that they have a Safek as to whether the Levi has to give it. So what's the question on Rav? The Baal Tosfot would say, V'yesh lomar, the lo mashmalei she'es Safek letano. They don't think that when the Braita brought it down, it seems like it's making a definitive statement rather than a Safek. It's not saying, mi Safek, he doesn't have to give it. It's making a definitive statement that he doesn't have to give it. So that would be a question on Rav, because Rav says that he's not sure. From the Braita, it seems like they're sure he doesn't have to give it. That's the nature of the question going to Baal Tosafot. But there was an alternate girsa in the Gemara, and Rabbeinu Chananu has in his girsa, Misayale the Rav. This Braita should help Rav out. And that means that the way the Rabbeinu Chananu had the Braita was reading it as a proof to Rav that also over here, you don't have to give it up because it's a Safek. And they were literally reading it the way that the Baal Tosafot asked. Why can't you just say that it's a Safek here? And that's exactly how the Rabbeinu Chananu reads it, and he thinks that it's actually a proof to Rav, rather than a question on a Rav. So the Gemara again says, Kegon Zroa Velo Zroa. When it mentions Zroa L'Chayayim and Keba in the Braita, it doesn't mean literally those items. It means that item, but something similar to it. Again, because it says Kegon. It doesn't give you the name itself. It doesn't give you Zroa L'Chayayim and Keba itself. It says like them. Umay Neu, Maaser Rishon. It's Maaser Rishon Levatar the Kansinu Ezra. After the Kanas of Ezra, where they don't have to give up the Maaser Rishon. So even though Ezra was kones them, Ezra fined them and said the Levim have to give up the Maaser Rishon to the Kohanim, nevertheless, if it's a Levi himself, we're not going to force him to disgorge it to a Kohen. If it's Israel or someone else, then he can give it to the Kohen. But the Levi himself, we're not going to force him to give up his own property to the Kohen. Tashma, Hashochet LeKohen. Someone who chefs for a Kohen, and this Rashi notes what we're going to see in the Gemara tomorrow, which is that the tabach, the butcher, the one who's shechting, is the obligated party over here. So even though it's not his animal, and he's shechting on behalf of someone else, he's the one that has to give up the zroa lechayayim and keba. So that's why it says, hashokhet lekohen. Someone is doing shkita lekohen, ulovei kochavim for a non-Jew, patur min ha-matanot. He doesn't have to give up the zroa lechayayim the keba. For the kohen, because it's his, he can keep it. And for the ulovei kochavim, he's not chayav. Ha? The deal, if you would make out of this, is the Levi or the Israel chayav. If he was shechting for a Levi or Israel, he would have to give it up. He would have to give the Zroa l'chayim and the Keba. Again, that's a question on Rav, because here it sounds like it's definitive that the Levi would have to give Zroa l'chayim and Keba. Rav says, no, don't say maha the Levi Israel chayav. Don't say that it's a Levi Israel, you would be chayav. Elay maha the Israel chayav. But for Israel, you would be chayav. Aval the Levi mai. So then what's the din by Levi? Patur. Then you should have just written that. If you wrote that, you would have known Kohen as well. If the Levi doesn't have to give it up, certainly the Kohen doesn't have to give it up. It would have been a kosher cane. It would have been a bigger chiddush to tell us that the Levi is patur. Write Levi and not Kohen. The fact that it didn't write Levi seems to indicate that Levi is chayav in the matanot. Ve'od, hatanya, shuchet l'kohen ulu oved kochavim. We have another brighter that says, yishakar kohen ulu oved kochavim, patur min matanot. You don't have to give the matanot, the zra l'chayayim in the kebab. The Levi of Israel chayav. Now it's explicit. It's not a deal. The bright day itself says that a Levi in Israel, you're chayav to give the matanot. So here you see explicitly that it is an obligation for the Levi to give the matanot. Tiyufta de Rav. That is a very strong refutation of Rav's position that it's a safek. Here you have a bright that explicitly says that he is chayav. You could say Rav Tano Polagu. The Gemara does not invoke that here because Amalcha Rav Tanaihi. It is a machloket Tanaim. Rav doesn't need to be the Tana here. We have other Tanaim that indicate that Rav Safek is a valid Safek, and that is the Tanya. We have a Pasuk by the Avoda of Yom HaKippurim. It says with regards to the Matnot of the Par and Seir, so Yom HaKippurim, V'chiperet Mikdash HaKodesh, that it will bring atonement for the Mikdash HaKodesh. This is the reference that's found in the Gemara in Shavuot to the fact that the Sirei Chatat of the Regalim, Rosh Chodesh, and Yom HaKippurim are brought because of Tumat Mikdash Ukedoshav. So here, this pasuk is speaking about Tumat Mikdash Ukedoshav. That means somebody who was Tamei that inadvertently went into the Mikdash, into areas that they weren't supposed to go, or someone who inadvertently ate Kodesh when they were Tamei Tumat Haguf. So either of those is Tumat Mikdash Ukedoshav. These korbanot bring kapara for those types of violations. And that's what the Gemara says here. V'chiperet mikdash ha-kodesh, zeh lifnai v'lifnim. The kodesh means the kodesh ha-kodeshim. Omoed means zeh ha-ichal. Mizbeach is kimashmo. It's to be mechaper on the mizbeach. Rashi says, with regards to mizbeach, it's a scenario or an incident where the individual became tamei internally, and on his way out, he does something on the Mizbeach. He does a vote on the Mizbeach. Because otherwise, he'd already be chayav because of Tumat Mikdash V'Kodoshav. If he entered Tamei, he would already be problematic because of that. Forget about the Mizbeach independently, doing a vote on the Mizbeach. So it has to be a scenario where he became Tamei inside. When you become Tamei inside, you have to leave in the fastest way possible. If you tarry in any way, it's the equivalent of entering while you are Tamei. So if he exits at the fastest, most expedient way, and on that path, on his way out, he happens to pass the Mizbeach, and while doing that, he stokes something on the Mizbeach. There, he won't be chayav for Tumah Mikdash V'Kodashav, but he will be chayav for doing avoda on the Mizbeach, B'Tumah. So that's the scenario that we're speaking about here, where you could get some port of Mekapara. Yichaper, Elu Azarot. Those are the other chambers of the Mikdash, other areas of the Mikdash, where you would also be Mechaper for people entered B'Tumah. Kohanim. Well, there we spoke about locations. Now we're speaking about individuals. For the Kohanim, Kimashmo. Amakahal, Elu Yisrael. The Amakahal that it's Mechaper for, those are the Yisraelim. Yichaper, the extra word Yichaper, which is unnecessary in the Pasuk, is Elu Alevim. The Tanya Yidach, and we have another writer. Yichaper, Elu Avadim. Yichaper refers to the Eved Kana'ani, who's Chayav in Mitzvot Ki Isha, and therefore he's Chayav in Korbanot. If he does something that's a violation of his Shogeg, he'd have to bring korbanot as well. He also is subject to the din of Tumat Mikdash V'Kodoshav. Because of that, he also needs kapara because of the accidental or unintentional entering into the Mikdash, bitumar eating kodoshim, bitumat aguf. So what you see over here is there's a machloket as to what the word yichaper includes. According to the first Tana, the yichaper includes the levim. According to the second Tana, yichaper includes the avadim. My la v'haka miflegei. Isn't this what they're arguing about? Demar Savar Ikru Am. The second Braita says Levim are called the Am. So when it says Am HaKahal, subsumed in that is both the Levim and the Israelim. Therefore he has the word Yechaper left over for the Eved Kenani. Umar Savar Lo Ikre Am. The first Braita says that Am doesn't include Levim. Am includes only Israelim. That's why he needs Yechaper to include Levim. So in essence, they're having a machloket. Does the word Am include Levim or does it not include Levim? And that's exactly the safek of Rav. That's what Rav says. There are Tanaim that argue about my point. For Rav, Isvirlei Kehaitana Lema. Isvirlei Kehaitana Lema. Why doesn't he just say, I hold like this Tana or I hold like that Tana? There are two Tanaim. Take a position with regards to Tanaim. The answer is, that's exactly his safek. He doesn't know which Tana is correct over here as to whether the one who says includes Levi'im or as whether the does not include Levi'im. And obviously that has enough nafkamina in our case where the demand for the matanot is from the Zayim Ishpat HaKohanim Et Ha'am. So the will determine who is Chayav. If you think subsumes within it Levi'im, then Levi'im are Chayavim in these matanot. If does not include Levi'im, then the Levi'im would be Pturim. And that's the safek of Rav in this instance. What's interesting is the Rabbi Kiva Eger over here points out that he thinks he has a proof that the Levi'im are not included in the word That is because Rashi quotes the Midrash in Zota Bracha with regards to the Levi'im. It says, "Ubritcha yinsoru," that they preserved your covenant. And from that, the Chazal say that Shevet Levi was the only Shevet that gave Brit Milah in the Midbar. All the other Jews in the Midbar did not get Brit Milah. Levi gave Brit Milah. When they come into Eretz Yisrael in Perek Hay of Yoshua, it says there that they have to give everybody a Brit Milah in order to do the Korban HaPesach because nobody in the Midbar got a Milah. And the way it phrases it is, V'chol ha'am ha'yilodim ba'midbar. Anybody who was born in the Midbar, lo malu. They did not give a Brit Milah to, and that's why they had to give a Milah. From there it sounds like, the does not include the Levi'im. Because the Medrash says that Shevet Levi gave Brit Milah in the Midbar. And then it says in Yoshua, V'chol ha'am didn't give Brit Milah. So Kol ha'am there is not including Levi. And Rabbi Kiva Eger said from there you might have a proof to that view that does not subsume Levi inside of it. Because there it says the didn't get Brit Milah. And we know that Levi did get Brit Milah. Very interesting proof that Rabbi Kiva Eger brings. Now the Gemara moves to Halacha L'maaseh over here. It says, Dorish Mermeimar, Hilchato Kavati Derav. Halacha is like Rav, that it's a safek with regards to Levi, and you can't force a Levi to disgorge the matanot. Hilchato Kavati Derav Chista. Halacha is also like Rav Chista, who said that Hamazik, Veha, Ochel, these matanot, is Patur Milishalim. Halacha is like him as well. Ula Habayohiv Matanta Lekahanta. Ula used to have the practice of giving his matanot, zroa, lechayayim, and keba, to a female kohen. Now that's not such a big chiddush, because she's part of the family of the kohanim. The chiddush, as Rashi says, is that even if she was an eshdish, even if she was married to Israel, he would give the matanot to the bat kohen. Because he thinks, it says, v'zeh mishpat kohanim meitam. Kohanim include a bat kohen. There's nothing over there that says that a woman is not included. So he used to give the matanot to a bat kohen who was married to Israel. Eit ve'rova l'ula. Rova challenges Ula's practice. Minchat kohenet nechelet. Minchat kohen ena nechelet. Comes to minchat kohen, we know that has to be kalil. It goes entirely in his mizbech. None of the shirayim are eaten by the kohanim. So a minchat kohen ena nechelet is not eaten because the shirayim go in the mizbech. It has to be kalil la'ashem. On the other hand, Minchat Kohenet, that you have Shirayim to eat. Well, if you're telling me that a Kohen and a Kohenet have the same din, they're both called Kohanim, why is the Mincha of a Kohenet, a Bat Kohen, who's married to Israel, why isn't that also Kalil HaMizbeach? Be'amar Kohen, Vapilu Kohenet. If you say the word Kohen subsumes within it Kohenet as well, Vaktiv, B'chol Minchat Kohen, Kalil Te'yeh, Lo Te'achel. Every Minchat Kohen is Kalil, you can't eat it. That should apply to a Mincha of a Kohenet as well. Amalei, Rabbi, Mitunech. He says back to my Rebbe, from the same place you brought the question, the answer lies, which is, Aron Ubanav Tuvim Baparsha. The Parsha of the Mincha, as we learned back in Menachot, starts out, Zotarat Mincha, Krevo Tabnei Aron. When you speak about the Parsha of Mincha, it opens with a specific directive to the Bnei Aron, only to the men, not to the Benot Aron. So over there, there's a specific miut that says that the Kohenet is not included. Over here, we don't have such a miut. The Beit Rabbi Shmuel Tana Kohen Velo Kohenet. The Beit Rabbi Shmuel learns over here, Dina by Kohen, not by Kohenet. Vilmod Satum Mina Mifurash. So why don't you learn that which is spoken explicitly from that which is not spoken explicitly? By the Mincha, it's clear that Kohen means a male Kohen and not a female Kohen, because there it says Bnei Aron. By us, we have the word Kohen, but we don't have any indication as to whether it's only Bnei Aron or even Benot Aron. Well, why don't you learn the Kohen here from where it does tell you? Sometimes in the Torah it tells you it's Bnei Aron, sometimes it doesn't. So in the places where it tells you that it is Bnei Aron, that should give us indication as to what's true by the case where there is no Bnei Aron. So the Bei Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Tana, Kohen, Vafilu Kohenet. Having miut, achar miut, vein miut, achar miut, elo rabot. There are two miutim in the pasuk, and when you have two miutim in the row, two minuses equal a plus. So the Bei Rabbi Shmuel says that it's Kohen and not Kohenet, because they learn from the case of Mincha, where it's explicit, to the case of Matanot, where it's not explicit. But they let it shed light on that case. And just like the Kohen by the Mincha is only Kohen and not Kohenet, so to the Kohen by the Matanot is Kohen and not Kohenet. On the other hand, the Bei Rabbi Eliezer, Lora ben Yaakov learned, it is two miutim in the pasuk. It says, Ve'yeh mishpat ha-kohanim. That's the first one. Me'etam, me'et zubcheh, zelachim shorim zer, natan la, Kohen. Again. Azroah, v'lachayayim, v'keba. The word Kohen is mentioned twice. So you're right. The word Kohen means Kohen and not Kohenet. But the pasuk says Kohen twice. So it means Kohen, not Kohenet. That's a miut, achar miut, ein miut, achar miut, ela, l'rabot. If you have something that's excluded twice, it's really coming to include it. And therefore over here, you would include the Kohenet and those that are the recipients of the Matanot. So now, Rav Kahana, Achol b'shvil ishto. Rav Kahana used to eat because of his wife. The problem is, Rav Kahana is a Kohen. So he didn't need to eat because of his wife, because he himself was a Kohen. Seemingly, and that's what Rashi points out here, Rav Kahana Yisrael Abba, that he was a Yisrael, and he was married to a Bat Kohen, and therefore he ate the Matanot because of his wife, who was a Bat Kohen. So you have to do one of two things. Either you have to look at the Masorah Shas he brings from the Shi'ultot that the person here was Rav Huna and not Rav Kahana, or the Balei HaTosafot say that there were two Rav Kahanas. One Rav Kahana that was a Kohen, one Rav Kahana that was Yisrael, and obviously we're referring to the Rav Kahana over here that was the Yisrael, and he was married to a Bat Kohen. But Papa Achal B'Shvil Ishto. But Papa was also Yisrael and married to a Bat Kohen. Rav Yemar Achal B'Shvil Ishto. Rav Yemar also was married to a Bat Kohen and ate because of his wife. Rav Yidi Bavin Achal B'Shvil Ishto. Rav Yidi Bavin similarly was married to a Bat Kohen and ate Matanot because of his wife. Tosfot says over here that obviously we're only speaking about a case where the Bat Kohen is married to a Tzar. If she's not married to a Tzar, she's just a Bat Kohen, or she's married to a Kohen, and she's entitled to Truma, then certainly you should be able to give her the Matanot. So he said that when Tana debate Rabbi Shmuel here excludes a Kohenet, that's only when she's married to a Tzar. Then in the end, he backs away from that and says, Miu, Efshar Gloya Vinan Leh the Rabbi Shmuel. Maybe according to Rabbi Shmuel, the necessity for Kohen and not Kohenet is even when she's not married to a Tzar. That's the din, period, and you can only give it to Kohen and not a Kohenet. Maybe that is even if she is entitled to eat truma. She only eats truma as a derivative of her father or her husband. She doesn't eat it of her own right. And so just like over there, it's not of her own right, so too the matnot can't go to her of her own right, and you'd have to either give it to a Kohen, her father, or her husband, and then she could eat from them, but it wouldn't be in an entitlement where you could hand them to her. So Tosfot has two views as to what the Bei Rabbi Shmuel's view is of a Kohenet that is not married to a Tzar. Either she's married to a Kohen, or she's single, whether you can give her the Matanot. Amar Ravina, Amar li Mereimar. Here's the conclusion of the Sugya Lehalacha. Ravina says, Mereimar told me, Hilchata Kavate Rav. Like we saw before from Mereimar, the Halacha is like Rav, that is a Safek, whether Levi is Chayav in Matanot. Therefore, we can't cause him to disgorge it from his own items, but we don't give him the right to go take it from someone else. The Hilchata Kavate de Rav Chista, the Halacha is like Rav Chista, who said that a Mazik, Ba'uchel Matanot, is Patur Melish Shalem. The Hilchata Kavate de Ula, and the Halacha is like Ula over here, that you can give the Matanot, at least the Zroah, the Chayayim, and Keba, you can give it to a Bat Kohen, or someone who's married to a Bat Kohen can keep it their own because of the fact that he's married to a Bat Kohen. The Hilchata Kavate de Rav Adar Ba'ava. The Halacha is like Rav Adar Ba'ava, that Leviyah, Shielda Benav, Patur Mechamesh Shleim. That if you have a Bat Levi that is married to Israel and they have a Bechor, they're Patur from Pijon HaBen. That happens to be a Machloket, as Rashi notes, in the Gemara in Bechorot, which we'll get to on Daf Mem Zayin, as to whether the Bat Leviyah that is Turah, who is she married to? It could be that she's married to Israel, and then it would be a proof to what we're saying over here, that a Bat Levi, if she has a Bechor, she's Patur, mi Pijon HaBen, because of the fact that she is a Bat Levi. We'll learn it in the Gemara in Bechorot. And what the Gemara is saying here is the Halacha is like him. There's an alternate opinion there that it's a Bat Levi who's married to a Goy. If a Bat Levi is married to a Goy, they're Patur, mi Bechor, because the father has no Yichus, because he's a Goy. So the Yichus then moves to the mother, and the mother is a Bat Levi, and that's why she's Patur. But has she married to Israel? where he does have yichus, then there would be an obligation for Pidyon Bechor, even if she was a Bat Levi. That's the other view there. And the Gemara here is paskening, Hilchotuk Ravada Baba. The Lachotuk Ravada Baba, that a Bat Levi, a Leviat, that gives birth to a Bechor, is Patur mi Pidyon Abed. So this is the only halacha that's not mentioned in our Gemara, but was brought together because these were all halachot that were brought from Mereimar, three of which are relevant to our Gemara, the fourth of which is relevant in the Gemara in Bechorot, which will also be quoted in that Gemara in Bechorot. Okay, we're going to stop here. 13 lines down on the top of Kuf Lamed Bet, Amud Aleph.